Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. The ancient city of Pompeii in southern Italy draws more than 2 million tourists a year. They come to see the remains of a sophisticated city that was central to the Roman Empire. Today, Pompeii is revealing fresh insights to scientists through a key new research component, a digital twin of the iconic city. For archaeologists Allison Emerson and Alex Elvis Badillo, the technology is an essential part of their research.
So we have this digital twin, we can look at the soil that we've excavated, but we can also select that unit of soil and see all of the finds that came out of it. The digital twin, the 3D model, it's the center of our research now.
Allison and Alex tell Esri's Karen Sullivan how advanced mapping and 3D technologies have enriched our understanding of ancient civilizations and the modern world.
Allison and Alex, welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
You've said that you're not particularly tech savvy. Why did you want a digital twin of a site that you've been working on for more than a decade?
Yeah, certainly don't consider myself a tech-savvy individual. I come up from a fairly traditional academic background of spending time in the library, much less time dealing with anything on the high-tech side. But I really wanted to make this a technologically engaged project because the way that tech is developing in archaeology right now is letting us do our work in new ways and in better ways, especially when we're getting at these really difficult questions that we're particularly interested in our project, which are about people who are really silenced in our traditional sources. So the better we can ask our questions and the better the data that we can use to answer them, the better chances we have of recovering those individuals' voices from the Roman period. And I had seen digital models of archaeological sites before. This is something that has been growing over at least the past decade in archaeology. But I think there are really three things that set apart the 3D model, the digital twin of the site that Alex has made for us. First, that it's so accessible, because often we have a problem in archaeology that to run a digital model can take a very high-powered computer, and most of us don't have those computers. The version that Alex has put together with the Esri products lets us access it even from our phones. We can look at our 3D model. At the same time, the model that Alex has made, apart from others that I've seen, is just its quality. It's extremely, extremely high quality. I think that the model they've made, When I'm engaging with it, sometimes I can see things better than I can even when I'm on the site and it's in front of my face. So it lets us keep doing our work even on the off season. That's really important when many of us who work on the project are working from entirely different continents from one another. And our work continues not just in the 5 weeks that we're excavating, but throughout the year we're working with this data. And the third thing that really sets it apart is the integration. So the way that Alex is building a model that lets us engage with all of our data through the model itself. So we have this digital twin, we can look at the soil that we've excavated, but we can also select that unit of soil and see all of the finds that came out of it, see all of the observations that were made about it in the field. And that's something that I really have never seen before that I think makes our geodatabase so incredibly powerful for the interpretation of the archaeological site.
And Alex, could you describe for us the size of this site and what shape it's in now?
Yeah, sure. So the site itself is an entire city block. So you have to imagine this kind of rectangular shape. That's about 33 meters by 80 meters long. And we're excavating within various rooms in the site itself. And so as the excavators are working, you know, we're documenting everything using this workflow, everything that they're seeing, all the observational data, taking photographs, making those scientific drawings. And we're recording that using our paperless workflow. And in terms of the condition of the site, I mean, this is a site that has now been open to tourism for quite some time. It's one of the oldest archaeological sites in terms of having archaeological work being done at the site itself. Most archaeological sites are constantly under stress of the environment, the physical environment, but also the human action that is occurring around it. So as people kind of walk through the site and visit the site, there are certain damages that are occurring in those moments.
Tell us more about what you have been able to do for Allison.
Yeah, so I'd like to first mention that what I'm about to describe was not solely designed by myself, but also in collaboration with a colleague of mine, Matthew Brennan, who's actually the one to kind of connect Allison and I in the first place with this interesting case here, this project. I'd also like to mention this is something that we do as a full team that's dedicated to what is digital data collection. And so we designed the workflow, but it has been carried out by a full team of digital data collection. And also the excavators are constantly at work with us to make this happen. But essentially, we created a paperless workflow to record all of the information that came out of this excavation, soil colors, soil textures. They're also collecting all these images as they continue digging, and they're recording all of their scientific drawings that they might be making on their iPads. We're taking multiple photos from every imaginable angle of the excavation, and we're using a computer to reconstruct this in 3D so that we can create that digital twin that we were describing before. Also, and Allison already mentioned it, in terms of accessibility, we used Esri's Dashboards app to actually make all of this information accessible to the entire team. We also used a 3D web scene to make those 3D images of the excavation accessible as well. And so this was extremely important to us in this project because we do not all work on the same college campus. We work in different places, and sometimes, in some cases, we don't even work in the same country. And so having the ability to, go online and just open up a dashboard and consult it as you're writing up a report or you're thinking about archaeological interpretations, it's extremely valuable to us as archaeologists.
So, Alex, you are also an archaeologist, and you are excited about using the mapping technology or creating a digital twin of the site. Why?
Any archaeologist will tell you that archaeology is about destruction and destroying while you're doing your best to document everything that you can. And that's just the nature of the work. We're digging, and as we dig, we remove everything from its original context and where it was deposited to begin with. And so the ability to create 3D models as we excavate, or a 3D model of a building, is extremely important to preserving how it looked in that moment in time and to recording all of those spatial attributes. So, for instance, where things are located gets recorded when we make a 3D model after we've referenced it. And that when I say referenced it is I spatially reference it, meaning I put it where it belongs in the world. And every single point has a 3D coordinate that tells me exactly where it was. So knowing where things were helps us with our interpretation. Being able to go back and measure things is also extremely valuable to us as archaeologists. And these 3D models are given scale so that we can just use digital tools to make those measurements, to understand the shape of things, the distance between things. The last 15, 10 years have just boomed in these technologies. And now we're at a point where we're able to do these paperless workflows and share them right away in real time.
Allison, you've worked on this site for 16 years. When you saw Alex's work, what surprised you?
Well, Alex's work really blew me away when we first started talking about the possibilities, and then when I eventually was able to see it and use it, and we really started putting it together. Because, yeah, as you said, I've been at Pompeii for a long time. I was there working on another project with the University of Cincinnati for many years. And saw through that project from excavation to the publication stage, which is the most critical part of archaeology, truly. Because if we don't publish it, and as Alex said, archaeology is destruction, then that was a waste. So as I was thinking about a new project, now that that last one is really done, I was really just dreaming about what would have been amazing to move an archaeological project from excavation to publication. Having done it gives you an entirely new perspective on what you really need in order to be able to publish a really complex site like this. So I was very much just dreaming of how to record in the best possible way and how new technology could contribute, because the technology has changed massively since the time we finished that last excavation. We ended our final season of digging was 2012, and then we just had the first publication come out, the first book, this past year in 2023. So over that course of time, when we were publishing the site, everything changed. Photogrammetry came in, drones came in. The technology that we used to record archaeological sites really made it entered an entirely new world. And so what was incredible about what Alex was doing with our site is, in many ways, it's like a dream. I mean, to be able to go back and see through the photogrammetry what the excavation looked like at any given moment, because every day it looks different and you can never go back. You keep digging, and as you dig, you're removing that material. But this allows us to go back. And for a long time, archaeologists have had this goal of recording a site well enough that someone else could come in the future and re-excavate, in quotes, through your documentation. That's what you should be aiming for, that someone else could come in and use your documentation as if they were redigging the site. And that, even though we've been trying for a long time, we've really never gotten there. Right now, we're closer than we've ever been.
And of course, you have friends who are archaeologists. What do they think of the work that you're doing in Pompeii?
I think most archaeologists see the benefit of this. The place where I do still get questions is about having so many people dedicated to doing the tech. It's still on many projects can be sort of an afterthought that someone who does another job will do the photogrammetry as well or something. We're a little bit different that we have an entire team on the site all through the entire excavation season who is devoted to making the models. And that's something that people will still ask me, well, is it really worth it? Is it worth it to, because every bit of money, every bed, every lunch needs to go to someone who's really contributing to the understanding of the site. And people will say, what do you really need four or five people doing that? The first season, I said, I don't know, we'll see. And as soon as I saw what Alex's team was able to create, I immediately was a convert as well and said, yes, it is worth it. It is worth it. This is the digital twin, the 3D model, it's the center of our research now because we spend most of the year not in Pompeii. Most of us are spending the year even not even in Europe or not even in Italy. And that allows us to keep doing our work all year round. And it also means that our publications are coming out so fast for archaeology. Archaeology is slow, slow, slow. And this has put us on warp speed, truly. What we're able to learn out of each season and how quickly and how well we can do it is entirely a factor of this technology.
I'm an archaeologist. I work in other contexts as well. I work in Indiana on some research projects looking at historic cemeteries. And we've actually implemented the photogrammetry in mass for the entire project and replaced traditional paper methods of drawing using this image-based technique. And that was in 2018, and we're still seeing the results and the benefits from that project, and we're able to continue doing analysis and continue using those data. So in terms of documentation, I really think it's the way to go, and I think any archaeologist would look at it and look at the results, which does take some convincing to convince somebody to give up a traditional method that's kind of the bread and butter for our discipline, and to shift their thinking and also shift the technologies they're using in order to do the same type of work. The extra thing that we get from doing this kind of work is the ability to then take those same 3D models and use them for public outreach kind of activities, right? And so there's actually that kind of public component of people being able to engage with heritage, engage with the past by using the 3D models in that way. And you can even annotate these things and write up small descriptions as to what it is that that people would be looking at as they kind of spin the model on their computer screen or on their cell phone. And then the other thing that you can get from a 3D model is you're able to print it out. You can actually take a digital twin, a 3D model, kind of fix it in a way where you can put it in a 3D printer and print out a copy of it that's physical but miniature at a much smaller scale. It's actually a very useful tool for people to be able to come around a printed model sitting on the table and discuss it together and be able to touch it and see it and manipulate it using a more natural method, which is just with your hands.
And Allison, how has a digital model of the site helped you better understand the social hierarchy in ancient Roman civilization?
Well, this is always the ultimate question for me because any archaeological technique, to me, it needs to serve our purpose, which is to find these stories of individuals in the past. And I am primarily drawn to the stories of the marginalized, those people who were marginalized in their ancient experiences, but who have also been marginalized in the study of ancient history, because they're not the people who appear in our texts. They're not the Julius Caesars, right? They're not the people that that get written about in history. If we're going to try and get at these people who are much harder to see in history, I think we need to approach the question by as many different perspectives as possible. So we're not really, I think Alex maybe alluded to this as well, we're one team, but that one team is made up of a lot of other teams and people who specialize in the study of different types of archaeological materials, people who specialize in pottery, people who specialize in coins, people who specialize in glass or metal, people who specialize in the environmental record of the site, the animal bones, people who specialize in the plants, plant remains that we find, and we have the digital data team. We're all these different teams within one, and this also lets us communicate with one another really easily.
What new things have you learned about that marginalized group of people and how they live and where they lived?
Well, one thing we're seeing that's really coming together in just 2 years of excavation, which is still very new. So this project is very young as far as archaeological projects go. We're really just taking our first steps. But something we're already seeing about the building where we're working is that it's a space that's combining a lot of activities. And many of those activities we in our modern cities wouldn't necessarily think go together. So we're starting to see quite clearly that we have in the building both a type of restaurant, but also a workshop. So they're doing a lot of commercial activities of different types that in our minds they might not quite fit together. So they seem to be manufacturing objects made out of reeds, so baskets and mats, things along those lines, in the same space where they're also renting out dining rooms and serving meals. And those meals are in some ways they're looking to the way that the elite dine. So they offer you dining in a sort of kind of well-decorated space, a space that looks like a well-decorated space, but definitely done on the cheap. But you know, right outside, they're also doing these activities that would be we probably wouldn't want to look at that as we were eating, watch people make things in a fairly industrialized setting. So that's quite interesting. We can see the ways that people are also living in this space. And one thing that comes out, we're always particularly drawn to are excavating cesspits, that is toilets, latrines, because out of those we can understand what people are eating, both the people who live in the space and probably the people who are dining, who are paying to dine in the space. We're getting an idea of the range of foods that they eat, which are actually quite wide, lots of fruits, a variety of meats, tons of seafood, which makes sense because Pompeii was on the coast, giving us a different view of the Roman world, where we often divide the classes into these two broad groups of elite and non-elite. We're starting to see a little bit more of a social hierarchy. We can also see how the people who are living and working in the building are interacting with the gods. So we're recovering the these small deposits that are left to ask the gods to bless the space, seeing what types of things these people think the gods might like, which range really widely from things like little cakes made with poppy seeds, to a gold coin in our most elaborate deposit, something that would equal about a month's wages for an average worker in Pompeii. So a really big gift to the god, which we don't know why somebody would have left that, but it seems like it was a pretty big ask. They were asking the god for something big, so they left something big for them. So these are the types of materials we're working with. And while we're still in our early stages, we're already starting to see new information about the lives of the people who are using these spaces where we're working.
Allison and Alex, your work in Pompeii is fascinating. Thank you for being here today to tell us about what your work has uncovered.
Thank you, Karen. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Esri and the Science of Where podcast. And thanks to Allison Emerson and Alex Elvis-Bedillo for explaining how geospatial technology is unlocking Pompeii's past and even advancing insights into present-day concerns. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.